Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Duke Health, offering food, medication delivery, and transportation to communities hardest hit by COVID-19. It's all through a special partnership with North Carolina agencies and 16 community-based organizations. Learn more about Duke's COVID-19 response at dukehealth.org. And Hungry Harvest, delivering farm-fresh produce and kitchen staples to your door starting at $15. Every delivery fights food waste and supports local hunger-solving organizations. HungryHarvest.net.
This is Tested from WUNC, a look at how we're responding to the day's challenges in North Carolina and the South. I'm Dave DeWitt. In 1938, before she became a civil rights activist, attorney, and Episcopal priest, Pauli Murray applied to the graduate school in sociology at UNC Chapel Hill. She was denied admission, at the height of Jim Crow, specifically because she was black. Earlier that same week, the U.S. Supreme Court had ruled on the Lloyd Gaines case. It was the first case that began to undo the infamous separate but equal Plessy versus Ferguson ruling. The court found that a state, like North Carolina, was legally bound to either admit a black student to a historically white public university graduate program or fund a similar program at a historically black university. Here's Pauli Murray herself explaining what happened next.
The legend is that Dr. Frank Rehm sent my application down to the legislature and says, look, what are we going to do with this? And presumably it was the bouncing of the application down to the legislature, the problems this raised for the legislature, look, you know, we can't fool around with this. The issue is upon us, that made it newsworthy.
With the eyes of the nation upon it in 1939, the North Carolina General Assembly had two choices: admit Murray to UNC Chapel Hill or create a similar program at what was then the North Carolina College for Negroes. The lawmakers did neither. In fact, the legislature waited until the spotlight died down, then cut funding to what is now NC Central University by one-third, and then adjourned for 2 years, with no legal penalty. But that's just one incident in decades of unequal treatment of the state's five public historically black colleges and universities, and one historically Native American university. This past year, some of North Carolina's HBCUs took a positive step toward more equitable funding. North Carolina A&T State University in Greensboro led the way.
This fiscal year, which hasn't ended yet, NCA&T has raised about $88 million. So that's starting in last July up to the end of March. So it's probably grown since then. And part of that is because they've been engaged in an 8-year capital campaign that ended at the end of 2020. And in that capital campaign, they raised more than $180 million.
Liz Schlemmer is WUNC's education reporter. She's been reporting on HBCUs and specifically how North Carolina A&T and others are increasing their financial resources.
I talked to Todd Simmons, who's the vice chancellor for university relations at NCA&T, and he talked about just the impact that this capital campaign has had.
To our knowledge, this is the largest capital campaign that any public historically black university has ever undertaken. And it has increased our endowment and managed assets to $153 million. Again, we believe a high watermark for public historically black colleges and universities.
So some of that's because of this intentional effort to raise money for the capital campaign, but it's also because of some very large donations that that campaign has received from individual philanthropists, from corporations, and also from alumni. 70% of the gifts to the capital campaign, in individual gifts, not in amount, came from alumni. The NCA&T spokesman that I talked to said that's really significant. It's a testament to the growing wealth of their alumni, as over time that they're finding that they have more alumni that are sitting in boardrooms where they can leverage that for corporate partnerships, and more alumni who are creating a culture of giving back their wealth. Then there were also some really large corporate donations. The largest was from Walmart, also from places like Goldman Sachs, Cree, Carrier. And then there was one really big individual donation from Mackenzie Scott. She's a philanthropist. She recently divorced Jeff Bezos and is a large Amazon stockholder and became the wealthiest woman in the world in 2020 during the pandemic, and has been giving a lot of that money away very strategically, especially to HBCUs.
So university revenue is complicated at even the smallest colleges, but a place like North Carolina A&T, it's especially complicated. It comes from fundraising and endowments, federal grants, research grants, even licensing, athletics, all kinds of different things. But get to federal funding. It's a significant source. And that also was really a boon to historically Black colleges and universities this year. How much generally did they receive? How out of the ordinary was the increase? And put it in some context for us.
All universities across the country received large packages of federal financial aid related to the pandemic this year. But in addition to higher education relief money, HBCUs are also getting additional targeted aid, and it is a significant amount per institution. I don't know what it is overall, but if you look at the UNC system and you add up the regular higher ed aid in addition to the HBCU aid, NC A&T is actually receiving more federal pandemic-related aid this year than any other UNC system institution. And that's really significant because A&T is less than half the size of the largest universities in the UNC system. So they're actually getting more in HBCU additional aid than they are compared to the regular higher ed aid. I added it up and I divided by the number of students, and I found that NC A&T is getting about $16,000 per student in federal financial aid this year. I'm hearing lots of superlatives from sources about COVID money being the biggest influx of federal aid to education in general ever, and also to HBCUs. So I talked to Harry L. Williams. He's the president of the Thurgood Marshall College Fund. This is an advocacy organization, a lobbyist for public HBCUs, and this is what he had to say.
It was a record-breaking year. We have never, ever seen anything like this for HBCUs. We had our what we call an annual fly-in, where we fly our presidents into Washington, D.C. This year it was virtual, and we invite them to meet with members of Congress to hear from them. And one of the members, Representative Jim Clyburn from South Carolina, who's an HBCU graduate, I did a fireside chat with him, and he's been advocating for HBCUs for years since he's been in Congress. And I asked him, I said, "Have you ever seen anything like this?" He said, "We have never had anything like this that has been so focused, so directed towards HBCUs."
Williams said that this big influx of money is due in part to a push from lobbyists who've been working on this for decades, like the United Negro College Fund and the Thurgood Marshall College Fund, and also credit to legislators like Alma Adams from North Carolina and the Congressional Black Caucus and the Biden administration, who have really pushed for additional aid to HBCUs.
This influx of federal aid, fundraising, it's still North Carolina HBCUs and HBCUs across the country are still comparatively underfunded in other ways. What are some of those?
I think we often hear the term historically underfunded. And when I talked to the spokesman from NC A&T, he said, well, it's not so historic. There are still ways in which HBCUs are being underfunded today. His top examples were a lack of doctoral research funding and funding for extension services at A&T compared to NC State. So extension services are rural community outreach programs that help with agricultural research, and small farmers, our listeners might know them as a place to get gardening advice. And that is supported in part by state funding, and North Carolina hasn't kept up with its matching funds to federal funding for these programs. I got a little bit of a history lesson in all of this. In terms of the history of land grant institutions, We often hear this when we're talking about NC State, or you can think of big public universities that usually have an agricultural or engineering focus. These were started originally in 1862. President Abraham Lincoln signed a law that created a number of these universities, including NC State. But at the time, Black students weren't allowed to attend those colleges. They were segregated, especially in the South. And so,
and this is the Morrill Act, right?
This is the Morrill Act. This is right. The original Morrill Act. Well, in 1890, U.S. Congress passed the second Morrill Act to give some of these resources to Black students and created a number of HBCUs, public HBCUs that tended again to have an agricultural and mechanical or engineering focus. And that is how NCA&T State University was born. But part of this act says that state governments need to provide matching funding. And in fact, many of them haven't, including in North Carolina. I read a policy brief from 2013 that at the time, North Carolina was only providing a little less than 70% of the matching funding that's expected under this law, because there's a waiver, and there's only a waiver for HBCUs. There's no waiver for the original land grant institutions. So North Carolina pays out for NC State. It does not, or at least historically has not, paid out fully for NCA&T. Also interesting point that I learned in all of this is that while North Carolina A&T State is considered a land-grant university, they didn't actually receive land the way that NC State did. They received some funding, but the land that the university was built on was actually paid for with money fundraised by members of the Black community. And these were many Black farmers of meager means who put their money together to get this university started, to buy the land for it.
So getting back a little bit to the fundraising for A&T this year, this is obviously, we've pointed out, a really fantastic year for their fundraising, helped along by alumni donations for the most part, but also, you know, the large donation from Mackenzie Scott and some other corporation funding that came their way. You know, every college and university, whether they're an HBCU or a historically white university, looks at these years and think, okay, this is a great year. How do we keep this going? So how does a school like North Carolina A&T keep this going, this kind of fundraising?
I think it's important to recognize that some of these donations came after George Floyd was murdered by a police officer. And 2020 was an unusual year in many ways. And I think that was an impetus, or I'm hearing that was an impetus for some of these donations and corporations trying to get out and, you know, create an image as being supportive of these Black institutions. I talked to Harry L. Williams from the Thurgood Marshall College Fund, who said, yeah, it was an unusual year, but their focus now is, how do you keep it going?
Our goal and our job right now is sustainability. We don't want it to be a one-hit wonder. We don't want it to be just, hey, this was one of those outlier years and you'll never see this again. We're working very hard to keep this as part of the dialogue within our country, because HBCUs have played a critical role in the history of our country in providing education and opportunities for those who didn't have it.
He also said that he hopes that this example of North Carolina A&T State raising so much money is something that can raise the profile of other HBCUs and promote philanthropy to these institutions.
Liz Schlemmer is WUNC's education reporter. If you're a regular listener to Tested, either as a podcast or on the radio, you may have noticed that the Tested team is growing. If you've missed previous episodes from our regular hosts like Leonita Inge or Will Michaels or Charlie Sheldon Ormond, you should really go back and catch up. And in future episodes, you'll hear from a wide array of WUNC journalists and content creators telling stories about North Carolina and the South you won't hear anywhere else. I'm Dave DeWitt. Thanks for listening.